Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the HD View. This is Melissa Bilardi, your host, and our calling numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and our awesome producer, James, will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about Help for HD, the HD View, and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. We are literally at 12,400 listeners now, so thank you for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. I'd like to preface the show by explaining a little bit about Huntington's disease for those who are not familiar. Huntington's disease, or HD, is a hereditary and terminal disease which destroys neurons in the brain and slowly diminishes the affected person's ability to walk, talk, and reason. In time, they will rely completely upon others for everything. HD devastates entire families emotionally, psychologically, socially, and economically, generation after generation. Every child of someone with HD has a 50% chance of inheriting the gene mutation. Juvenile Huntington's disease, or JHD, is more rapid and virulent. They experience many additional traumatic symptoms, decline in scholastic, adverse behaviors, seizures, dystonia, and other severe and painful conditions. Our JHD warriors need much more support and resources. So what I would like to do is ask you, our incredible listeners, to communicate with us in the Help for HD chat room by typing your questions to us. We'll take a short break and then return with our incredible special guest, Dr. Ellen Feigl from CIRM. And now the HD View soundtrack.
Thank you.
back. And first, I just want to say hello to everyone in the chat room. Wow, it's amazing to see all of you there. Thank you for tuning in. And we're back, and our amazing, super amazing, incredible special guest tonight is Dr. Ellen Feigl. She is the Senior Vice President, Research and Development at CIRM. That stands for the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. And prior to joining CIRM in January of 2011, she was Executive Medical Director, Global Development at Amgen, which is, a biotech company, where her primary focus was in clinical development of therapeutics in hematology and oncology. She also led the scientific clinical interface with patient advocacy organizations, formalized the company's policy on expanded access to therapies and for those with limited or no treatment options, and led cross-functional teams to the company's first collaborative research and development agreement with the National Cancer Institute. She has a long, long list of amazing credentials, and we are so fortunate to have her here with us tonight. Very diverse medical and professional background. She is definitely a valuable asset to CIRM in many ways. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Feigl. It's a pleasure welcoming you to the HD View. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm fine, and thanks for the opportunity to thanks for the opportunity to join you and your listeners. I'm happy to be here.
I am so pleased to have you here. Well, tell us what brought you to CIRM, and what do you do as Senior VP of R&D there?
Well, I think there were really several factors that brought me to CIRM, and I think the first and foremost is really the transformative mission of CIRM, the transformative nature of CIRM's mission, which is really to help patients, and to help patients that have debilitating diseases and injuries. And it's doing it in a very special way by trying to advance very innovative stem cell-based science into potential therapies and cures. You know, there's still a lot of very urgent, unmet medical needs that aren't being sufficiently met with our current technology. And this is really an ability to try and take these very innovative approaches, capture the best science, work with the best investigators, work with all kinds of different patients and patients groups, and really in a very exciting and challenging way try to chart new pathways to bring these therapies to for patients. So I came here, as you know, in January of last year, as CIRM was really ramping up its efforts to approach the clinic and to lead as part of a larger team many of the work and the programs going forward towards and into the clinic. I'm a physician by training. I've got background and experience in research as well as product development at universities and in small and large companies and have been at funding agencies and nonprofits. So really what I was trying to do is use some of my prior experience and background and see what I could do to help this really amazing mission here at CIRM. So I feel very fortunate to be here and very happy to be involved here. My position really is really trying to focus on trying to move and position our translational programs as best as possible so that they can be more successful in moving towards and into the clinic.
Right. Well, now tell us a little bit more about CIRM. Give us a little overview of what CIRM is and what they do and where did it come from? Where did CIRM start?
Well, the voters of California created this agency. I mean, this was done through Proposition 71. It was a vote in November of 2004, and it really authorized the state to create this stem cell agency and with funding to really move programs forward. So it was led by patients, by patient organizations such as yourself, by the community, and by a very dynamic and passionate leader for the cause. And this was really being done at a time when there were restrictions at the federal government level to pursue and conduct this type of promising research. So the first couple of years at CIRM were mired in some of the politics of what was going on in stem cell research, and funding finally came in late 2006. So our first 5 years of funding were really focused on establishing a strong foundation for the research, for bringing in the research leaders, for trying to seed the entire field with discoveries using a variety of different stem cell-based platforms. And, you know, over the past, 5 years, this has really resulted in about $1.3 billion in awards to about 60 institutions, publication of more than 1,000 scientific articles, construction of safe havens, 12 state-of-the-art stem cell facilities, migration to California of about 130 of the world's best stem cell researchers. And right now, we have about 43 different programs in translational phases of development in about 26 therapeutic areas, all of them trying to head towards the clinic so that they can reach patients.
And this is not just for Huntington. So we're talking about many different diseases, right?
Right. Huntington's is a very important disease, but we are pretty ecumenical, I guess you could say, in terms of the different types of therapies and approaches that we're looking at, and all based on stem cell science. But we go wherever the science drives and where there's an unmet need. So Huntington is one of those 26 different therapeutic areas that we're looking at right now.
We're very, very, very happy to hear that. Well, let's talk about what is CIRM's focus and with whom do you collaborate with? Because I know you are doing some collaborations.
Well, you know, CIRM is focusing now in the we're in the I guess you'd call it the maturation phase of CIRM right now, where the initial phase was exploratory, you know, trying to experiment with different types of stem cell-based approaches and looking at a variety of different disease areas. And we're going to continue that engine of discovery and exploration to a certain extent, because that's really what drives the progression of the research, is continuing to have discoveries and have that creativity moving forward. But also we're going to have more of a focus and emphasis on driving towards the clinic and into the clinic. And I would say our focus is on that area of research that's typically not well-funded by companies or by venture capital, by industry, what some people call that very dry, parched landscape that doesn't get funded, the valley of death. So we're really working.
That term coined, but I never really understood what it meant exactly.
So it's that dry, parched landscape that is really hard to get funding for, and it's high risk but potentially high impact. It's also those types of therapies that they need to go forward. It may be uncovering some obstacle on the pathway to get your research done, or it may be the necessary studies that need to be done to move through, animal studies and all kinds of other studies that need to be done so that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, who regulates product approval in this country, in the United States, so that those studies can get done, so that they can get into patients first in clinical trials, and then eventually, once there's enough information gathered by those clinical studies, hopefully to go through approval so that it can reach the broader population of patients.
So does CIRM fund projects through all phases from, I don't know what levels you would call that, I'm not familiar with terminology, but from clinical research on through to clinical phase, or...
Well, we continue to fund basic ideas and basic research and fundamental, but it's really applied towards the human disease or the human injury. So there's a connection with that medical need. And in addition, what I also want to say is that collaborations are also the cornerstone of what we do, and although the funding is focused on research that's taking place in the state, we have 18 different collaborative, what we call collaborative funding partners in the United States and globally, so that actually we can leverage expertise and research across the world. So that what we want to see is our research really being utilized in the best way possible. So we're really trying to leverage things. The types of research, as I said, we do the fundamental engine of discovery, but what we primarily look at, and what I'm calling that valley of death, are those types of programs that are necessary to get a product into people. So they may be some studies to see whether or not it's safe and what kind of dose to give and how often to give it and make sure the quality of the product is manufactured in the right way. And this is all under, once it reaches a certain stage, it's under a whole set of guidelines and regulations that's put forward by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Right.
And then we also fund first in human studies, and then through the early, what you may heard of phase one or early phase two studies.
Right.
What we don't fund are the very large confirmatory clinical trials, which really, by that point in time, what we hope is that the data will be strong enough that companies or venture capitalists, they'll come in and invest in that further development of that therapeutic approach.
Drug companies and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so what we hope is that our plan is really, our strategy is that we fund the higher risk programs. And we look at these different areas where, for whatever reason, the company decides it's a business risk, or because the pathway through the FDA is hard for an innovative product, they'll wait and see with funding whether or not we can get through some of those difficult pathways before they'll put their toe in the water and invest some money to make it move forward. And we know that we already do have some companies with toes in the water that are
right.
willing to collaborate and work together. So we have a lot of we have a lot of faith that this is actually going to be able to go forward, and we have a strategy for helping to ensure that that happens.
Right. Now, we talked a little bit about regulatory with FDA, but you also have an independent citizens oversight committee, and what role does that play?
Well, the oversight committee, there's 29 members on our oversight committee, and they represent different scientific and clinical disciplines. And in addition, we have patients that serve on our oversight board. And so they really are there to provide an independent view of the agency. They are involved in hearing about the progress of the agency. They were there at the beginning to really help set some of the policies and some of the, make sure the regulations and the perspectives of the proposition really were able to be imbued in this agency. So we meet with them. They're a very critical part of the agency, and we meet with them on an every other month basis, and then we also have a variety of different venues for interacting through subcommittees. And all of our meetings with the oversight board are done in a public setting. So frankly, we know that the Huntington's disease community has come to our public meetings, and we've really greatly appreciated that. And so it's really to help keep transparency about how we work and to make sure that there's actually good governance of how the programs are identified and how the money is spent, so that we certainly do want to be very good stewards of the estate's money.
Good to know. Now, let's talk a little bit about the importance of patient advocates. And, you know, of course, this show is about Huntington's disease. I know that people, advocates from our HD community are quite active in your organizations.
So the patient voices are actually what inspire and drive us. I mean, the patient voice is critical. It's what's launched the state stem cell agency. It's the urgency of the medical needs that drives our research. We don't want to do business as usual. We want to do it smarter, better, faster, without sacrificing, you know, safety to the patient or quality of the research program. Patient advocates, as I mentioned, they sit on our board. They represent about 30% of our board. They also are part and they participate in all of our grants review groups. They represent about 30% of the group at each of those meetings. They do have active voices in the process. And we listen to the voices. We know that they don't speak with one voice, that they have different perspectives and issues just like everybody else. But we actively do listen, and they're engaged in various aspects of this research enterprise. We think having that kind of involvement with the patients, with the researchers, with the investigators, that really benefits the entire process. We learn, they learn. And so in addition to the board meetings and the review meetings, we also have patient scientist meetings across the state on particular therapeutic areas.
Wonderful. Now, also CIRM has quite a TV site on YouTube called CIRM TV. That's CIRM TV. I would invite anyone to go there and look and see what CIRM is doing. It's pretty incredible. Ah, we have a question for Dr. Feigl.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's Crystal. Crystal, are you there?
Yes. Dr. Feigl, there's a question from the community from Marie Clay. She says, what can be done to get the clinical trial to the patient? Those with HD and dystonia have difficulty traveling just to their local doctor.
Well, we're trying to. We are funding some early translational work. We also just recently funded a planning award, where the team is trying to plan for entering into the clinic. Let me just see if I understood the question right. Is the person asking what are we doing to fund research that goes into the clinic, or is she asking a different question?
No. What can be done to get the clinical trial to the patient, like those that have dystonia and can't even make it to their local doctors?
Well, what we're trying to do is, you know, initially those initial experimental trials may be done at some selected sites where the expertise is there to actually take care of the patients, and where there may be some specific issues relating to how the therapy is delivered, you know, depending on you know, is it delivered into a vein? Does it need to be delivered by some surgical procedure into the brain? So there's a variety of different issues. So sometimes the sites may be selected just for those very early experimental, but as more experience is gained, then we will be able to expand that to other clinical sites. But hopefully, her physician, if they're involved with clinical trials, would have a way to get involved. All of our clinical trials that we do go up on a public website in terms of where they're located and some information about the clinical trial and what the therapy is. We'd be part of a database on a national database called clintrials.gov. So she or anybody else who wants to look at would be able to see what clinical trials are going on in Huntington's disease. And she could share that with her physician and see if there was some way that she could somehow be involved, or find out a way if the physician could somehow be involved in that trial.
Great question, Marie. Thank you. And Crystal, thank you so much for bringing that up. Did we have any other questions, James?
Not at this time, but we have quite a few people in the chat room listening.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, everyone. Let's just talk a little bit more about what CIRM is actually doing in the science of Huntington's disease.
So we're funding right now, we have about $10 million in funding in Huntington's disease. And we're funding institutions at UC Irvine, UC Davis, Scripps Research Institute, and they range from basic biology to focus on the development of new cell lines to study Huntington's disease so that we can better understand how the disease works and hopefully screen for compounds that might be effective in working in this disease. And in addition, we're funding what we're calling therapeutic candidates to try and characterize them and understand whether or not they might be suitable for eventually going into the clinic. And in addition, we're funding a planning award for a disease team that's assembling a team to implant cells that are engineered to secrete a certain factor that's needed by nerves so that they can stay alive and healthy. But in Huntington's disease, this particular factor plummets to very low levels due to interference by the mutant Huntington protein. So they're trying to assemble a team to work on that. In addition, we're working with the National Institute of Neurologic Diseases and Stroke at the National Institutes of Health. We're funding a Huntington's disease researcher at UC Irvine who's working on a type of cell called pluripotent stem cell that's induced, that's derived from the patient's own skin cells.
Oh, yeah.
And they're developing a, well, we're part of the development of a cell bank for sharing with researchers who are working on this particular disease. And it's initially for disease modeling to better understand the disease, but also for drug discovery, so hopefully to identify other diseases, I mean other therapeutic interventions that could be helpful. And I think a major also impetus really for research and treatment has focused on cell therapies to either protect what we call vulnerable nerve cell populations or to replace dysfunctional or dying cells. Those are sort of the three different approaches in general that are being looked at.
Wow.
And so anyway, those are some of the things. So right now, you know, we're funding across the gamut, at least in terms of the most promising proposals that come in Huntington. So as I said, one in basic, some looking at the cell lines and disease modeling, two that are trying to identify therapeutic candidates, and one that is a planning award.
Wow, this is incredible. Now, I knew that CIRM was really doing some fantastic things, but do you know any other states that are following suit? I mean, I haven't heard of any.
Well, we're of course a pioneer in California. You know, I'm very proud to be part of a state that you know, take such a leadership role in trying to attack a problem front and center. There are other states that do have funding for stem cell research. There are a handful right now. They're in New York, the Stem Cell Foundation, in the state of Maryland, also in Connecticut. So there are a handful of other states that are trying to work specifically on stem cell research.
So for our national listeners or our global listeners, you could check with your own state or province to find out if you have any stem cell programs, correct?
Right, but you could also look at our website. We have collaborative funding agreements with several of these groups, or at least letters of agreement with them to work together. And so you may be able to find it on our website, but and we'd be happy to share that information in terms of what state is actively engaged in research at this time.
Right. I know that when I first heard about stem cells, you know, the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh my gosh, it's so new and it's, I didn't really know that much about it, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I would just advise, you know, or suggest anybody go to the CIRM website and just start reading about it, because it's incredible what is being done with stem cells across the board. I've heard of macular degeneration being studied with stem cells. And what are some of the other diseases that they're looking at?
We're working in cancer. We're actually working on therapies that attack the cancer stem cell to try and get at sort of the primitive cell that really gives rise to different tumor cells in the body, and trying to do it by that approach. We're working in the area of AIDS and HIV, trying to actually develop, it's a cell therapy and a gene transfer approach, where it is based on information that was gleaned by what we call the Berlin patient, a patient who had HIV/AIDS and who also had a particular type of blood cancer called leukemia lymphoma. And that patient got a bone marrow transplant for their cancer, but the physician who was treating that patient made sure that the bone marrow donor also had a mutation in what's called CCR5, which is the entry receptor for the AIDS virus into the human body. And that patient, when they received that bone marrow from another well patient who had that mutation in CCR5, not only were they cured of their cancer, but they were also cured, well, I use cure in quotes, they were functionally cured of their HIV. It actually went to undetectable levels. So using that approach, we wanted to make it, investigators wanted to make it more exportable to the population with AIDS, and we knew that it's very rare to find a bone marrow transplant donor who might have that mutation. So we're funding two disease teams now that are working on trying to take their own cells and then genetically engineer the cells so that they have that mutation and then infuse it back into that same patient. And then the thought is that they will be able to resist further AIDS virus getting into their body. So we're working on HIV, we're working on cancer, we're working on macular degeneration, working with a human embryonic-derived stem cell that is trying to replace some of the pigment cells in the back of the retina so that they can prevent further loss of some of the cells that are dying and causing people to lose their vision. And the thought is that by putting these cells into the retina, into a person's eye, they can replace some of the needed cells and, first of all, prevent further loss, but hopefully try and restore vision in that way. We're also working in cardiovascular disease and a variety of other neurodegenerative diseases, including Parkinson's disease. So we're working on a variety, as I said, we're working in about 26 different therapeutic areas and trying to move forward, you know, so that we can make progress there.
Amazing. Fascinating. Okay, so how can we get more therapies for HD into development? That's the question.
Well, I think it, you know, the underpinning for all of the, what we're calling translational, and by that I mean trying to translate a good idea in the lab into something that can be translated and transformed into a product that can be given to a patient, is we need to keep that engine going of discovery alive. And so we definitely need to hear from patients and patient organizations to keep that urgency up there, to keep it in the middle of the radar screen in terms of where the research needs to go. We need to have the researchers interested in focusing on this particular area. But in addition, we also know that there are other areas that may shed light on what might work in Huntington's disease. So we also, you know that people who are working in Huntington's, what they find may help other people with other types of neurodegenerative diseases. So it's not completely that you have to be working in Huntington's disease. It could be that there's other discoveries and research done in other areas that could be related, that could shed light on what to do here. But it has to be built on some rationale in order to develop that therapeutic candidate to be able to move forward. So it's built upon some understanding of what's going on in the disease, what is causing the disease to take place. And in Huntington's, it's clearly the mutant Huntington's protein, but then it's very complex in terms of how that protein really causes the havoc in the person's, ability to walk, to talk, to reason. Mm-hmm. And so there's still a lot we don't understand about those cell-cell interconnections. We also know there's a certain part in the brain where that mutant protein initially goes, but then we also know there's other parts in the brain that are also affected. So it's not just one area that's affected in Huntington's disease. And how do we get at all those different areas is certainly a challenge in terms of understanding how to deliver the right therapy to the right location in the brain. So there's a lot we still need to understand, but it takes the research, it takes patients and patient organizations such as yourself, and of course it takes funding from CIRM and hopefully others, to help move these types of programs forward. So I think a combination of all those things needs to align so that we can make progress.
Fascinating stuff. Well, we're getting ready to take a break here, but first, would it be all right for us to reach out to you somehow? The CIRM website is CIRM.ca.gov, but is there an email or phone number where people can reach you if they have specific questions?
Well, my email is efeigl, E, F as in Frank, E-I-G, A as in Apple, L, at CIRM.ca.gov.
Okay.
And, of course, I'm also, Melissa, working with you. We also work with Judy Roberson, who's a very active member of the Huntington Disease Group.
Yes.
And so there's lots of windows into CIRM. I hope people who are able to can join us at our public meetings. They can join our newsletter on our website, get information about what we're doing, find out about all the different programs and initiatives that we're working on. So I think there's several different ways to reach out. And,
we're
also looking for ways to be more actively reaching out and trying to find ways to listen and understand about what the needs are and try and figure out ways to address them.
Have you thought of maybe coming on our website or maybe a Facebook group or something to that nature?
Well, actually, a lot of CIRM people are part of LinkedIn. I know a lot of us are part of Facebook. I know that we have a very active social media group here, and there are probably a variety of ways that we could get engaged electronically in addition to trying to meet when we can in person or some other means.
Well, we would love to support CIRM in any way, shape, and form that we can. So we'd love to, link up with you. And I want to thank Anka out there for helping me to get all the information to you that I needed to before the show. And we look forward to a continuing relationship, and hopefully, I'll get to meet you all someday.
Well, I think the work that you're doing is absolutely fantastic, and whatever we can do to try and help raise awareness or reach out, and we'd be very, very delighted to figure out better ways to or ways to strengthen our interactions. So we really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you're so welcome. We collectively with my contacts and our team, we have several thousand people that we can, put information in front of at any given notice. So keep that in mind and let us know if there's anything else that we can do to support CIRM. I think we're going to take a break now. And Dr. Feigl, would you be able to answer a few questions when we come back?
Oh, sure.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, we're going to take a break.
I mean, at least I'll try to.
Okay, great. Little break. I believe. Okay, we're back with Dr. Ellen Feigl from CIRM. Just have a couple announcements here first. I wanted to tell you all thank you for listening to the HD View with Dr. Ellen Feigl from CIRM, and that's California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. This is Melissa, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers. Please call in if you have questions, 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. Just press 1 and James will cue you in. Upcoming shows and announcements, we have March 5th, the HD View, Ask Dr. Goodman. March 12th, HD View with Dr. Jan Nolte, UC Davis Stem Cell Program. March 16th, the HD View, we have a face film review. That's going to be a fun one. I have an open show for March 19th, March 24th, the JHD View, 2012. March 26th, the HD View, it's another Huntington Study Group research clinical trial. It's called PRANA, Reach 2 HD. April 2, the HD View with Ask Dr. Goodman again. April 9, the HD View with Doc for HD. April 16, the HD View with Dr. Paul Machowski, Gladstone Institute of Neurologic Disease. April 30, the HD View with Dr. Michael, UCSF Memory. It's actually Geschwind, but I forgot that part. Anyway, UCSF Memory and Aging Center. And I think we have some announcements. James?
Yes.
Hi, James.
How are you, hon?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, we have some exciting stuff, right?
Yes. I know that Clarice Miller, DeShalimar, and Dion Lieutenant are out there listening. They're both actually on with us now. I just wanted to take this moment to thank both Dion and Clarice for their amazing support. Without their support, wehaveaface.org would not be heading towards our year anniversary in March.
Yay.
So thank you, Clarice and Dion, and we love you so much and appreciate your support. Now, something exciting. Many of you are aware that we will be meeting some of the film team here in Orlando next month to do the trailer. So we have decided on Friday, March 16th, on a very special Blog Talk Radio with you, Melissa, that we will be announcing the lottery winners.
Ah, that's exciting.
Yes. So if you're listening, if you have not entered the lottery yet, the deadline for entries are at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 10th. And I will be putting out a little pitch tonight with some information also. And we will be choosing 5 community members and announcing them on the show. So this is actually amazing. It'll be the day before anniversary. So we all got together and thought that it was the time to do it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, now explain real quick. The lottery is not for money. It's for a spot in the actual documentary.
Team will travel to these 5 individuals in their community, at their house, whatever is best for them.
Okay.
And it'll give them the opportunity to tell us their story in the documentary. So we are so excited, so stoked to do this because it's giving a voice to the community. Now, 5 will be chosen. Now, that number may go up in the future. but now, we are going to choose 5.
This is our shot at having a really big voice out there. So, James, how many entries do you have now?
It was over 400, and that's all over the world. So
and
just when you think you shouldn't enter, enter.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think maybe the number might get bigger, yeah?
I'm hoping. So if you're
depending
listening.
Depending on funding, right?
Exactly. We have a face.org/lottery with a capital L,
okay.
And I will also put out information tonight with the actual deadline. And it's going to be exciting because we're going to be meeting some of the film team here in Orlando for the very first time in just over 2 years. So it's going to be emotional. It's going to be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I want to go.
I know.
I want to go. Okay. Do we have an announcement from DeShalimar?
Yes. Let me bring Clarice in. Clarice,
oh,
you there, hon?
Hi, Clarice.
I'm here. Hello.
How are you?
I'm tired. I'm listening to tonight's show, and it gives so much hope. I may get a little emotional.
Okay.
I'm tired of signing into Facebook and seeing week after week how many people are being lost to Huntington's and juvenile Huntington's. I can remember when I was a kid, my father telling me, well, you know, you're not going to have to worry because by the time you're an adult, they're going to have the cure, you know. And here I am, an adult, and I'm tired. And my partner, Dion, always says to me, you know, Clarice, there's always one more thing you can do. We've been asking for many years, you know, where is the research being done? Where is the most hope and the potential? And we were presented with Dr. Nolte's research with the stem cell that I think is our hope. It's our hope. So we have just launched a new website, and it is called endhd.org.
Okay.
And we have all Dr. Nolte's information there. You can go on and see what she's doing and the potential and the hope. And we are now taking donations for this research.
Wonderful.
It's time. It's time. There's potential there. You know, we have to try.
Right.
So
if we don't try, we'll never know, right?
Exactly. So we just invite everyone to check out endhd.org and see what Dr. Nolte is doing. And we just want everyone to know that every dollar that's donated will be sent to her for her research. And
wow.
It's time. It's time, you know.
Is that
it's
like 100%?
100%.
100%. No administrative
yes.
fee from you guys. Right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
No administrative fee from you guys.
No, I don't even know what that is. You know, one day I'm going to have a salary. One day, but it's not going to come from donations for research. To me, that's just not even an option. You know, these are our loved ones.
I think we just lost her. James?
Maybe. Yeah, she'll call back in.
Call back
okay.
in.
Yeah.
That's just fantastic,
but
what she's
that
doing.
That is fantastic. And, you know, how many times do you hear of an organization like DeShalmer.org, a 501c3 corporation that is going to donate 100% of proceeds to a research cause? I know, you know, on the other end, there's usually some administrative costs involved, but it's not very much. And I know that this money will go to the right...
I think we have Clarice back.
The right place.
I'm sorry.
Clarice,
don't know what happened.
Gremlins.
Those gremlins. But, yeah, we're very excited about this.
Oh, my gosh.
It's been what we've been looking for since we've had our nonprofit.
Right.
And I really believe that there's hope there.
Right.
Well,
now,
I wanted to let you know we found Dr. Nolte as well as one of our research leaders in this area. So
yep.
Yes. And I think it's amazing that the show lined up with the announcement.
It is. Very
it really it really worked out well.
I'd like to mention something real quick before. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Clarice, but I just want our listeners to realize and understand that DeShalmer.org supports several causes. The veterans, our VA people, which are in desperate need of a lot of, you know, resources and home, even a home. People who are victims of domestic violence. And now DeShalmer.org is supporting Huntington's disease. They have put themselves out there to help us. And they are the only organization in, as far as I know, in the country that will donate 100% of the proceeds to the research cause. So I just want to put that out there and tell you thank you for doing that.
Well, and I also want to let people know that we do have many different programs, but we have separate funds for each. If someone is saying, well, I don't want to donate to this because I'm afraid it's going to go to that, that's not how we work. Mm-hmm. If you say this is a donation for the cure, that's where it goes. If you say this is a donation to the HD Relief Fund, that's where it goes. If you say this is for the Vets House, that's where we put those funds. You know, we're not taking money for one thing and using it for another. And I think it's important people realize that. It's very, you know, the donation buttons are very written out as to where it's going. I just want to let everyone know that's where it's going.
Right.
You know, it's not not going anywhere else but where you position it to go.
Okay. Now, is there another program that you're wanting to tell us about?
Oh, the EDI program. I love that program. This, there is no profits from the EDI program. The EDI program is just to bring smiles to the children who are affected by juvenile Huntington's disease. If you haven't heard the EDI story, you can visit. We have a face/EDI story and see the background behind it. But we've had a list of children who have juvenile Huntington's disease put their name on, and they say, I wish for an EDI. And then we've asked people to purchase that EDI, and people have been doing it. Every child on the list so far, someone has purchased an EDI to gift to them. We're actually waiting for the gift cards now from the printer,
That's
and then
great.
They're going to be sent out probably next week.
How
but
many
it's just
EDIs
something
have gone
to. None have gone out yet, but 10 have been requested and 10 have been paid for.
Okay, so
by someone donating it. Yes,
okay.
Which is really nice.
Yeah, and if you go to wehaveaface.org and go to JHD Kids Corner, click on the EDI story, and you can see EDI right there. It's really cute and very, very puts a smile on your face, very cheerful. So thank you so much again, Clarice, for all of these programs. And we so appreciate what you're doing. And you and Dion. Dion, we love you, too. Thank you so much. And James, did you have any other announcements?
No, actually, that's it for right now. And
okay.
Like I said, I cannot wait to meet a few of the team members, and we wish we could have everybody here. But that'll come, I have faith, in the near future.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll come back. We have a couple more questions for Dr. Feigl.
Reach out to space.
Back with Dr. Ellen Feigl from CIRM. And Dr. Feigl, we have a couple questions for you. James, I think Jonathan had a question. Did he want to come out and ask her the question?
Let me see. Be right with you.
Okay. You know, we had originally talked with Dr. Feigl about comorbidity in Huntington's disease. I know my son has diabetes, Klinefelter's, secondary Addison's, and kind of wonder if anybody else out there has, you know, multiple disorders like that. Have you seen
anything
like
that? Okay, we have
like
Jonathan
that?
With us now.
Okay. Have you seen anything like that? Dr. Feigl?
With comorbidities, it certainly can occur. I was just going to maybe point out that in addition to focusing on Huntington's, we actually do have some of these other disorders that we're looking at, including diabetes and blood disorders and joint cartilage skin disorders that we're also looking at. So hopefully these can help inform at least or shed some light into why these other things or at least potential ways to intervene in some of these other areas.
Do you know of any studies happening right now with that?
We're not doing any studies on comorbidity in Huntington's disease, if that's your specific question.
Do you know of anybody that might be?
I could look into that. Right now, I'm just not aware of some of that, but I could get back to you on that.
Great. I think Jonathan has a question. Jonathan, are you with us?
Sure. Hi, Dr.
Hi,
Feigl.
Jonathan.
Thank you so much for what you guys are doing. That's really awesome. I guess in the JHDHC community, we're really concerned about getting something that makes the biggest potential difference in actually curing the disease. And there's a lot of stuff out there that seems to have really good potential, but there's a lot of complexity too. So one obvious thing is like single allele gene therapy, RNAi silencing, is one approach that seems to be perfect because you're just targeting the bad mutant protein. But that's something that's a little difficult to do because you have to analyze the patient's genome, so it becomes complex. And what you guys are doing with mesenchymal stem cells is already complex to begin with. But trying to bring out the best therapeutic to make that big difference, there's even like the new stuff on the horizon, there's the GM1 chemical that seems to reverse Huntington's in the mice and really promising therapeutics like that. Mesenchymal stem cells can deliver almost anything. They're kind of the ultimate delivery weapon, it seems. And I don't know if that sort of stuff is still potential and what you're working on, or do you get locked down by a system that requires you to just follow an approach that was seen at one point, you can't adapt it to, like, the latest and greatest technology. So, I mean, it sounds like a lot of different areas I'm going in different directions.
No, you want to know if we can adapt to where the science is going? Is that your question to some extent?
It's kind of to that extent, and also if that's the way you feel things are going, and do you want encouragement to do that? I'd certainly love to.
Well, I think, you know, even initially, you know, I mentioned that CIRM explored a variety of different stem cell-based platforms, even though maybe some of the initial impetus or the, you know, with the genesis of the agency was around the politics of human embryonic-derived stem cells. That didn't limit us to looking at a variety of different stem cell-based approaches and even using stem cell technology to discover biologics and small molecules. So we're fairly exploratory in terms of the different types of approaches as long as it's stem cell-based in some way. And we do try and adapt. I mean, when the Institute first formed, induced pluripotent stem cells, you know, was really not on the horizon back in 2004. So I think that we can adapt to where the science is going, and if there's a strong rationale and if there's, you know, intriguing data to support it, my answer to you is, as long as it's based with stem cell-based type interventions or biology, I think that we do have the capability to investigate it. I think what I was telling you earlier was just, you know, we will continue to explore, but we are also trying, because the purse is finite, to at least advance areas where we think there's potentially more promise to be able to go in. But in addition, we'll bring things from the outside. Not everything has to be from our pipeline, so that if there's something going on out there that's more advanced, we can, you know, try to bring it in. So I think we are very receptive, not just receptive. We want to take the best science and bring it into the agency.
Wow, thank
you. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
That's a great answer.
No, that's awesome. Thanks.
That was a good but complicated question, Jonathan.
Sorry.
No, that's good, and I think it is important that we're not, we certainly have, you know, a scope and a general mandate of what we need to do, and as time goes on, we certainly do want to be able to show measures of progress as we're moving forward. Yeah, but we're definitely paying attention to the science and actively, you know, inventorying that landscape to see where the best ideas can come from. So that's why we do have collaborators around the world, because we know there's a lot of smart people in California, but we know there's probably a lot of smart people outside too. So we want to make sure that we're collaborating in areas where we need to so that we can move things together. We really do want to work together on this.
That's great. That is refreshing to know that we have a state agency that is wanting to collaborate because, you know, the world is a big place, right? And if we can all work together, how much more can we accomplish by doing that? So we appreciate all of your efforts at CIRM. I know you have to get to a meeting, Dr. Feigl. I just wanted to tell our listeners, we'll conclude the show, and let's there are any other questions out there? Just like to thank everyone for tuning in to the HDV with Dr. Ellen Feigl from CIRM. And don't forget to send your questions or suggestions to my website, helpforhdinternational.org. Find us on Facebook and groups, Help for HD. And come back and listen to the recorded episode, and please send it out to your colleagues and to your friends. Go to helpforhdinternational.org. You can listen from there. We have a face.org. and deshalmar.org. Get the app. It's a Help for HD on the road, Help for HD app. It's a free app download. You can listen to the show right from there. You can get all the information from our websites there. Also, the HD View you can listen to right from iPhones, iTunes, Android Market, a free download. And the app is the original education resource, the information about JHD and HD. Dr. Feigl, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate what you're doing, and you're a brilliant, brilliant woman. We appreciate everything that
that you do. Thank you. Well, you know, I don't know about that latter comment, but thank you very much. I really appreciated the opportunity to be on the show, so thanks very much.
Thank you, and good night, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you Monday.
Okay, good night.
Good night, all. Love you out there.
People living their lives for you on TV. They say they're better than you, and you agree. He says, hold my calls from behind those cold brick walls. Just call me a boy. There ain't nothing for free. Another doctor's bill, a lawyer's bill, another cute cheap thrill. You know you love him if you put him in your will, but.
Hey, everybody. We're back. I just want to apologize. Dr. Feigl had a meeting to go to, and so we ended a little bit abruptly. I'm sorry if we didn't get to answer any questions. Please send your questions to helpforhd-international.org, and I will see that we get them answered for you. And I just appreciate everybody out there in the chat room and those who are listening live. We love you. We care for you, and we'll continue to bring you as much information, resource, and education as possible. And, again, thank you all, and you have a good night. Talk to you next Monday. Bye, everyone.